The UFO was first seen as a brilliant pinkish-red star in the southwest sky, many times as bright as the brightest stars in the midnight, moonless blackness of the night. The owner of the first self-served supermarket in Cuenca, who lived with his wife and children east of the town on the Huanca-Acuas Highway, was unaccountably awakened at 1:20 after midnight and got up. Looking out the front window, he saw this very strange star moving and got his wife up to see it. They both watched for a moment, and she went and awakened their 17-year-old son, who also joined them in time to see the star, now a brilliant yellow-orange in color, land on a grassy meadow on their side of the river and beyond the highway. The light dimmed down to a reddish glow with intermittent red flashes. The two brilliant white narrow beams of light came on and shined straight up into the sky. The local Toyota dealer in Cuenca and a party of 9 people in a station wagon returning from a family gathering in the countryside south of this point were just crossing the river on a bridge to the north when they saw the pinkish red star to their west. It was moving east in a slow floating trajectory below the ridgeline to the southwest, like it was looking for something on the ground. They observed the color change to reddish orange and intermittent flashes of red light blinking. They reached the intersection and turned left onto the highway to Cuenca. The driver pulled over to the right and stopped, and they all got out to see this page down. About the same time of night, the country highway's supervisor 48 and his 50-year-old son were returning to Cuenca from where he worked at Acuas. They were giving another adult highway engineer who worked for the same department a ride with them. At about 1:35, as they rounded a switchback overlooking the same river and bridge to the south, they saw ahead and beyond the road bridge to the west, between the river and the Rhone, what looked like a car that must have left the Rhone at high speed and crashed with its headlight pointing straight up. This driver pulled over to the right and stopped, and all 3 men got out and crawled down to the bank to the meadow level a few feet below. They could see through the willow break between them and the crash that there were 3 men moving about outside of the so-called car, but this so-called car was very different and it had not crashed. It was a dark circular metallic vehicle with a raised dome about the size of a Volkswagen bug on the top of a sloping circular all around flange, and seemed to be resting on 3 cylinder-like legs. It had dozens of small, dim, alternately spaced red and blue lights around the underside of the rim. The ground underneath dimly reflected the red a blue glove. There was a red beam like a searchlight that seemed to rotate slowly around the outside of the rim of the craft, which illuminated the surrounding trees and side of the mountain above the highway each time it came around. Besides that, there were two brilliant narrow white beams and beams of light that shined straight up from a tube-like cylindrical device that projected through the metal housing just below the cockpit dome in so-called front. A sliding door was open in the canopy, and three human beings in white, close-fitting, one-piece cover-all jumpsuit were standing outside on the grass. One of them had his left foot up on the rim flange and stretching forward over the leg was doing something to the cylinder that housed the two vertical white beams. The other two stood behind him, and to his right, one closer to the open door of the ship. The middle one was holding some tools in his hands and handed one to the repairman doing the work. This act strangely looked like it was done in slow motion or like underwater. All three men had their heads uncovered and were breathing over air. The uniforms were all alike and of the same strangely scintillating and or shining white material. There didn't seem to be any collars or cuffs or any buttons or seams, and no pockets in the uniforms. The only thing that looked familiar was a kind of black epaulette on the shoulders of all the three, like a navy uniform, the witness said. One of the UFO notes turned and looked right in the direction where the three men were crouched behind a raised water conduit running through and separating a willow brake, and at that point the 15-year-old became so frightened he began to vomit. His father ordered him back to the car, but he was too afraid to go alone, and his dad had to take him. The other man refused to be left alone, and so they all went to the car together, where the father locked the youth in and went back with the other man to their viewing vantage point. When they got back to the landing place, the three UFOs were inside the red illuminated cabin, and the two bright white lights were out, and the red rotating light had speeded up. The red and blue rim lights were much brighter and had colored beams shining down. There were several orange beams of light shining down also from the center underneath, and the whole ship now seemed to be going through the color changes of heating up metal. It rose slowly to about 50 feet as it retracted the cylinder landing gear with the round foot pads on the button, and the red beacon speeded up to a blur. It glowed through red to pinkish orange to orange to and suddenly shot off like a ping pong ball stuck fiercely and ricocheting between two close walls, almost like a zigzag lightning stroke. Now there was one very difficult case to dispute. I had discovered these three parties independently. Until then, they each knew nothing of anybody else's experience that night. They each thought they were the only ones to witness this event, and all of them hesitated to tell anybody else for fear of ridicule. It was never written up by any of them until we did it together in a few weeks after it happened. They only contacted me because I had given a UFO slide lecture in Guernsey and I was an outsider and therefore no danger to them. They all refused to let their names be used and refused to let me publish their names in Ecuador. There had been no media coverage of this case and the witnesses are unknown to each other. There was no mistaking that the humans, they were just like us. I had to revise all my thinking. First the unsupported Palman story, then the Bolivian shepherd who had lost his sheep to some ufonauts who arrived in a disc-shaped craft, and twin Aymara Indian brothers meeting human beings near Lake Marshauchi, who took them. No, next in the book is a sketch. Finished on this sentence. They took them inside their disc-shaped spacecraft to the underwater base. All the stories I had heard from the Indians of the Andes and the Amazon basin of their brothers from the sky, which had interpreted to mean angelic beings in their religious mythologies, all took on new meaning now. When Antonio Necta, a Jivaro medicine man in the Jivaria above Suca in eastern Ecuador, said that the brothers were real and were flesh and blood like you and I had to believe him. He thought their disc-shaped craft no more remarkable than our helicopters, and from his point of view I could not disagree. His analogy was an interesting one. He didn't have either creationist or evolutionist theories to worry about, and scoffed at both arguments as being very silly. When he asked him of his origins, he swept his arms around over all the whole jungle to the east and said their ancestors came from a great land to the west, Novgan. Those in turn came from another world before this. He said the brothers from the sky still come from those other worlds, and he knew that there were many up there. Not complicated at all to him. He did not wish to go to the United States, and he did not wish to go to another planet. But why human? How many species of human are out there? I suppose a single analogy on a world scale might be found in the insect kingdom. There are scores of species catalogued and may be as many more not yet discovered. They are found everywhere, in the air, on the ground, underground, in and underwater, in the snow and in dense darkness and brilliant light. Some can survive in heat and some in cold, and in dry and some in wet, and even intense radiation environments. They come in a great number in size and sizes in every conceivable variety. There are great differences in eye structure, mouth, respiratory system, wings if they have them, leg structure, etc. Yet they all have six legs and exoskeleton, a horizontal frame and a stereosensing. They did not evolve in a linear chain, one from another, in an unbroken sequence, and they are found in every part of the world without exception. Is it any more complicated to realize that an infinite creator may also provide a great number of different species in the human kingdom, perhaps on an even greater scale, and endow them with the ability to propagate from planet to planet as insects propagate from locality to locality? Maybe only a few basic are common, such as an erect form, a torso, a single head, and two arms and two legs, both with appendages. From there, the diversity of unit adaptation, as with the insects, might be considerable. I don't think the lightning stroke in chemical slime is really a tenable origin, that, and suggest that perhaps some of these ufonauts may be right when they say that humanity migrates from planet to planet just as we go from continent to continent in our small world universe. Another strange coincidence that fits exactly into this timetable, location and scene was another special UFO research project that may, in light of later events, prove to be highly significant. These familiar with the mysterious phenomenon more recently called synchronicity will understand better what is really going on. In any event, I met Gerard Greenwell on another airplane delivery to Lima in 1968. Greenwell was the teaching of the university in Lima when my friend with the newsclip collection gave me an address and suggested I get in contact with him, that he headed some kind of local organization investigating UFOs. Meeting him proved highly exciting, and he had a great deal of information. We got along so well that I later sponsored him so he could come to Tuscan to take over the open job of office manager for the Aerial Phenomenon Research Organization, headquartered here in Tuscan, a job which he held for years. This was a perfect arrangement because Richard was a bilingual, being fluent in Spanish as well as English. He had even written a freak UFO book in Spanish, one of the classic documents, though it has never been printed in English. In 68, Richard was spending a lot of time in investigating a UFO photo case that had perhaps the best color photographs of UFOs up to that time in the whole world UFO scene. There were four photographs in all, and Richard was trying to establish the facts in this case as best that could be done under the circumstances existing at the time. See Appendix 1 for a complete report on this investigation, as it is pertinent to the story we are about to reveal. Next page, we have come to page, 17, I think. Now, what is the, so significant about all this is that those four pictures that were taken near Uguay, high on the upper shoulders of the massive Mount Huascarán, which lies in a straight line from the Americans' plantation, Americans' well, that means the extraterrestrials. It's by Yavari River, where they were using silver disc-shaped airplanes, so-called, and another site north of Pucallpa, also being the entrance to the Ucayali Valley, and the plantation site straight to the nearest waters of the Pacific. And those four pictures were taken in the same month of 67 that American so-called activity was at its busiest, and the time of the story in the news clip of Pullman. A few years later, young Guay was completely wiped out in a massive mudslide. Those four photographs were of silver disc shaped flying craft with a dome on the top. It was also in this same area in 67 that Captain Sanvitti was flying in a Douglas DC-6 commercial passenger air transport of the Forsett airline on the regular run with a full load of passengers, and route from Chiclayo to Lima, when it was approached from the east from Mount Huascarán by a large funnel-shaped flying object that flew all around the transport in flight at close range in full view of all the passengers, and then flew out of the sea. To the sea. This stupendous demonstration was repeated by a second identical ship that came from the same direction, from the east to the left, as the first funnel-shaped object was disappearing to the west out over the Pacific. Both of these huge airplanes, bigger than the airliner, came from the same area northeast of Mount Huascarán, where we find the Merrim River.